And now, as promised, the Movie Mole's Denise Morris and Victoria Saucedo to review Joker.
It's 1981 in Gotham City. Arthur Fleck lives with his mother, Penny, in a shabby apartment, works as a party clown, and aspires to be a stand-up comedian, writing jokes while chain-smoking in his free time. Gotham is in the thick of decay. High unemployment, a lengthy garbage strike, social services are being cut, and billionaire Thomas Wayne is running for mayor, vowing to clean up the trash, literally and figuratively. Wayne promising Gotham will be great again. Joker, directed by Todd Phillips and co-written with Scott Silver, took inspiration from the 1988 graphic novel Batman, The Killing Joke. But this film is far from the DC comic film translations of the past. Director Phillips envisioned this Joker origin story as a, quote, way to sneak a real movie in the studio system under the guise of a comic book film. Phillips looked to films like Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, among others, to create a visual style and feel that matched the film's fictional time period. Joker, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Francis Conroy, Zazie Beetz, and Robert De Niro, has been the center of much controversy, including what some have described as a moral panic resulting in fears that the film will launch an anarchist revolt in the streets, or forever dash our hopes for a socialist revolution. So is this film the most powerful film ever? A superhero itself? Is it a character study, not just of Arthur Fleck, who becomes Joker, but of the nature of American austerity and the ravages it leaves in its wake? Victoria Saucedo, welcome back to KBOO.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I'm glad to have you because I need you for this one. You are, Victoria, more schooled in the world of DC Comics and Marvel films. You would say immersed.
Although I would say maybe immersed in the pop culture of the movies.
Very immersed?
Pretty immersed. Capable of watching them over and over.
Oh, yeah. More capable than I. But it's great to have you. We saw this film. We saw it once.
So. We saw it once. I would say, though, that this movie is definitely a movie that begs repeated viewings.
And, you know, essentially, we could say the film comes with baggage. Neither of us saw or read anything about the film.
Correct. We both went into it trying to go in again with what I call that pure experience, not having read reviews, just go in and see the movie.
Mm-hmm. Joker leaves behind the fantastical kind of superhero stuff, along with all the fast action, the special effect. It's a much different look at an origin story.
It really is. And so in the world of comic book movies, it is very grounded in reality. There's no one with a superpower. And unless you think about the Wayne family, their superpower is wealth, extreme wealth. But this movie is different. Because it's so grounded in reality, I think that is actually the nature of the controversy of the film. There is no one that defies gravity. You can't go to an alternate universe. There's no upside down. This is real. Social services are cut. Someone loses their job. People are murdered. And it's set in this alternate reality, so to speak. Gotham, 1981. But the movie is really talking about the decay of the system, the social services, the failure of the commons that just go away, and what results? Death, despair, destruction. It's this destruction not only of the family, but of the human body.
Isolation. And this is a big part of who Arthur Fleck is. He lives with his mother, who I think is a very interesting character, has a job.
Precarious as it is, he does have a job, something that he's supposed to go to ostensibly day in and day out. So again, that grounds him in his community. The relationship with his mother grounds him. And slowly but surely, he loses everything that keeps him a functioning member of society.
A lot of people have had criticisms about the characterization of mental health in the film. And then there's way more to say about that, neither of us being experts in that area.
You know, for Arthur, the show begins. He's mugged on the street by what he terms just a bunch of kids. He goes home kind of broken, bruised up, defeated. He takes care of a parent. We see him visiting his social worker. We see him subsequently losing his job. So for me, it's a very honest picture of the precarious, frankly, medical services that anyone has on the margin. His job doesn't come with those social services. He gets those social services because he's too poor to afford actual mental health care on his own, private, that kind of thing. So I take the stance that this movie is an indictment of the system, the failure of the system.
And yet at the same time, it's an origin story about a decades-old arch-villain.
Correct. In super arch-villain, absolutely.
Super arch-villain.
Batman's primary nemesis.
That's right. And you have said basically the Wayne family and by extension Batman. Batman's superpower is wealth.
Correct. That's his penultimate shield, Bruce Wayne's defiance. His extreme wealth will always, always protect him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wielded like a bludgeon over everyone else, including somebody who's that marginalized. Yes, we can discuss, you know, Arthur Fleck being a straight white man in America. He is not powerful in this movie.
The only condition that we understand about Arthur is that he laughs at inappropriate moments.
Correct. And it's supposed to be this Tourette's-like reaction to stress. So in a stressful situation, he will laugh uncontrollably. And it does sound weirdly maniacal because he cannot stop it. And you do see him trying to stop himself. He wraps his hands around his throat, trying to choke off what he knows is inappropriate laughter.
Mm-hmm. And what's the worst thing in a social circumstance is to laugh inappropriately?
Yeah.
I mean, this is part of the thing that's so interesting to me about this film is the way that it really digs into these questions about how people fit in and in what circumstances. His mother, Penny, he refers to her telling him, you know, you should smile. You're put here to make people smile. We both have agreed that the mother character is actually an underappreciated character in the film and tells us a lot about some of the dynamics that happen with working class people or people who are struggling in poverty and their relationship to wealth and the kind of fantasies that evolve around those attachments. Could I become that? Could I be helped by that? Do they actually care about me? So in the film, Arthur is really her primary caretaker as well as her friend, her husband, her son. I mean, he is everything to her.
And subsequently, she is actually that for him. That is his primary social outlet.
And they watch TV, and in an interesting ode to King of Comedy with Robert De Niro, who was obsessed with becoming a comedian and was obsessed with Jerry Lewis in that film, Robert De Niro finds himself in Joker as the late-night TV host. And Penny and Arthur watch his show religiously every night. Arthur's relationship to Murray Franklin is a lifeline.
Absolutely. It's one of the few things that he has, this delusional life where he's on the show making jokes, is kind of the successful comic that he could go on the show and say hi to everybody, wave to the audience and get a hug from the host and sit down and talk.
You know, I push back on some of the criticisms of that in terms of how it depicts him and mental health. We all live delusional relationships. I mean, isn't it a delusional relationship that working class people have any connection or interest or hold any billionaires in high esteem? And yet we've got one running the country right now.
Absolutely. Collected. About a mass delusion.
Right. It's a mass delusion. And so we are accepting circumstances and consenting to exist in a world that is to our detriment.
That is incredibly dire, that is slowly but surely killing all of us.
In the film, the mother has a belief that the powers that be will help not just the city as a mayor, as Thomas Wayne, the billionaire, becomes mayor of Gotham City, but that that person would actually care about them and help them as individuals, as an individual struggling family. This, to me, is one of the most interesting parts of the film, is how our ideological and fantasy lives merge with the realities that we actually live in and how we make sense of our existence. One of the criticisms that has come up is this question about whether or not this is a progressive masterpiece, because there's always all sorts of hyperbole that goes on about how it's going to be the greatest thing ever. It's a masterpiece, it's a cinematic, la la la. Because it doesn't show a kind of system correction or a vision of what it would look like on the other side of capitalism, the critique is that it can't possibly be a progressive film.
I think ultimately the film functions at its best when viewed through the lens of not subtle indictment of the system. It's an indictment of capitalism from beginning to end, an indictment of the austerity from beginning to end that is all happening all over the world that we see. It's destroying people's livelihood. It's taking people's homes. It's leaving people with little to no food. Some people don't even have good drinking water. Even in America, you know, Flint still has bad water. I think that the movie really does function on that level the best when you look at it as, again, an indictment of capitalism and how the commons have failed.
There's something about the way that the relationships are developed in the film, about the way the film flows, about the focus on Arthur, interactions at work. It's rich with that kind of thing. And in every detail, in every scene, there is a story being told. And I think that's part of what we struggle with as viewers. As Joaquin Phoenix said, if you don't know the difference between right or wrong, I mean, how can a filmmaker help you figure that out? You know, we're still talking about developing arch villains in a DC comic world in the context of Taxi Driver.
Sure. And I do agree. The movie is slowly but surely building that case study, that story where we see Arthur lose gradually everything. And there's a major break that happens with regard to his childhood. And the person that we know, Arthur, is ultimately gone. All the points at which he could have been helped, all the points at which he could have been stopped, they're gone. They're long gone. And it's useless at this stage of the game.
I wonder if, really, when it's stripped down, it's a cautionary tale about barbarism and about our descent into barbarism.
Absolutely. And there were many reviews that discuss the choice. What are we going to choose? Will we choose socialism or will we choose barbarism? And I absolutely agree with that. I think that it's ultimately the cautionary tale, because we are, like many countries right now, right on the cusp, and we need to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the movie poses that question in this sort of scary but evocative way.
And the way that television and film works now, it's not over till it's over. Because Joker ends the way that it ends does not mean that's the end.
No.
So the hope for revolt and revolution and the destruction of capitalism is still possible in the DC comic world. We shall see. Victoria Saucedo, thank you for joining me this morning to talk about Joker.
Thanks for having me over here.
And this is the Old Mole Variety Hour. Joker is playing out and about everywhere. Lots of opportunities to support smaller theaters in your efforts to see this film.